Gillian Welsh and Winters Come and Gone. From alcoholism to university professor, from addiction to Native American spiritual healing, Herb Nabigon charts the story of his life in his autobiography, The Hollow Tree. In it, he explores his belief that addictions can often be a way of filling an emptiness, a hollowness on the inside, which a rekindled spiritual life can help heal. I caught up with Herb Nabigon on a recent visit to Scotland and started off by asking him about growing up in Canada.
I was born in 1942 in a very small community called Picmulberts First Nation. It was about 300 people, and my father took us trapping every fall, all winter, and we spent the winters in the bush hunting and for moose and other animals to feed ourselves and to sell the pelts to a fur buyer in North Bay, Ontario. So that was the early stages of my life, living in the bush with my parents.
So it was a pretty hard life, hard work, eh?
It was hard work, but it was very comfortable. The colonization, at least the education, started when I was in about 7 years old. I went to a residential school in Spanish Ontario, and that's when all the troubles began. For example, there was lots of violence against the children. We weren't allowed to speak our language. We were beaten, and our hair was cut, chopped off. And our food was next to starvation. And there was a lot of sexual abuse of children in those schools.
Now tell me, I spoke to a Native American poet, Louise Half, when she was in Scotland in the run-up to the Commonwealth Games, and she talked about her very traumatic experiences at a residential school too. Did you, as children, if you like, stick together and stand up for each other, or did you feel outnumbered, if I can put it that way?
Well, if you had a big family in those schools, we hung together. But some children came alone, and they didn't have nobody to hang out with or to protect them, so to speak. So they had to fend for themselves. And many of my classmates are children my age, my generation, are now, say, for example, dead, or they died in prisons and basically died in poverty, and they didn't survive as well as I did, for example.
I mean, that is just so sad and so tragic to even revisit that and to think about that for children at such a young age. Because obviously you would be bringing your own traditions, your own beliefs, your way of lives with you, which is such an important part of your identity. What if that is important to you?
Well, to begin with, our traditions, our belief systems, they were outlawed by the Canadian government. We weren't allowed to have our powwows or our ceremonies until after 1962. At that time, I was, 20 years old? So I grew up without the tradition, so to speak. And I became very ashamed of who I was. I didn't like being Indian. I didn't like the country. I didn't like anything about Canada in those days. So it was all negative.
What does that do to a person?
Well, it creates a poverty of the mind. Your mind is completely shut down, and you have no respect for anything in life, and all you want to do is escape with alcoholism. And that's what I did for about 20 years or so.
And do you think you recognized that turning to alcohol was like a crutch, was a substitute for those feelings of inferiority, I suppose, being oppressed by a larger community?
Yes, it was. I'd like nothing more for someone to irritate me on the street, and I'd go out and do my job, sort of platinum kind of thing.
Where do you think that rage comes from?
It comes from the lack of identity, lack of who you are as a human being, eh? Like, the rage was very deep, for example. One time I seen a conductor on a train slap my mother around just because she was trying to help me up on the railroad car.
And were you just representative of a lot of boys of your age at the time? Was this just a natural way of lashing out?
It was just natural. Everybody in my predicament was like that. All the boys, all the women, all the whole family. Families were destroyed by that system because we weren't allowed to speak to each other in our language. We only can do it secretly, sort of example. And the parents in the end supported the idea of not speaking the language because the only way to get a job was to learn how to speak English in those days.
There's a similar history in Scotland, of course, with the Scottish Gaelic language, but that was many, many years ago, and people certainly felt marginalised by the fact that they couldn't speak their own tongue, and there was an attempt to get rid of it. So those kinds of things are familiar to me, Herb, in a sense, but it's many generations, well, maybe not many, a couple of generations before me, that sense of not being allowed to be yourself.
Exactly.
Where do you start to find yourself again?
Well, it's a looking back in your memory, looking back into your yesterday and addressing those pain from yesterday, that shame, being ashamed of who we are, facing that head on and relearning what the culture, the way of life is all about, relearning our traditions, relearning our ceremonies, how to live basically in at peace in your environment.
You lost your arm when you were a young man. Tell me what happened.
I got hit by a train when I was drinking in a little town called White River. My arm was from the elbow up to the shoulder was like hamburger. And I was taken from White River to a little town called Marathon. I was almost dead, obviously. And the doctor said to me at the time, the only thing that saved my life was my heart was strong. And they had an emergency blood donor clinic at the hospital, just a tiny little hospital. And my cousins from our surrounding community came to the hospital and donated blood so I could live. And my dad was one of them that donated blood. I was still very much addicted to alcohol and my dad said to me, you know, son, you can't live here anymore. Because if you do, you got no future. You're going to die prematurely, and I'm going to give you a choice. You can stay with you here with me and kill yourself, or you can go to a school in a major city, which was Toronto, and upgrade your skills and learn how to read and write and learn how to do other things. So I took the second option, go to Toronto, and I upgraded myself into what they call GED, that's a grade 12. I don't know if you have similar programs for adults here in Scotland, but it was a program for adults to upgrade. Finished my high school and then went to community college. Got married in the process. Had a son that was born in 1970. I named him after my father. His name is Clement Navigon. And now he's a practicing lawyer in Oshawa, Ontario. Works with children, and he works in a children aid society, working as a children aids, fighting for their rights and protecting the children. So he have a lot of respect for my son.
I can understand that, given what you went through yourself. I want to bring in this fight with alcohol because I want to talk about your traditions and your spiritual inheritance and the role that they played in helping you deal with this addiction.
Well, I was first introduced in a very serious way to my traditions in 1979 with two elders who I came very close to. And both of them taught me on my very first fast that in order to heal that hole in you, you have to, first of all, sacrifice the east door of our sweat lodge. The east door represents food, and the west door represents water, two basic life givers. And if you sacrifice those two, what they call grandfathers, grandfather food and grandfather water, restore your confidence and your health. So I was thinking to myself, gee, you know, what a way to try and restore your health, you know, to sacrifice food and water for 4 days and four nights in the mountains. And it's very cold in that area. So I did it because they recommended it. And then on the fourth day, they took us into a sweat lodge. And my very first sweat, I was brought in, and the elder asked me to sit on the south door of the lodge, which represents time and relationship. And what they do is they use a rattle. And the very first sound that the spirits heard was the sound of rattle, where water was rubbing against the rocks along the shoreline, and it sounds like a rattle. And when the spirits hear that, they kind of get curious, and they come, and they know they're invited into the lodge when they hear that rattle. And then when I was sitting in the south, the wings of an eagle, you can hear flapping inside. And the wings, you can hear them all over in the lodge. Everybody hears them. Then in the west is where he sat, Peter. You're seeing little lights like on your ceiling there, in there, and they started floating around. Mm-hmm. And those are the spirits coming to visit, and they acknowledge us, who we are. And they told me at the time, the way you acknowledge yourself is, it's like when you acknowledge your best friend, you have to really acknowledge them and respect them. So the spirits come in and do that to us. They acknowledge us and learn how to respect yourself through his presence. Eh? Since 1979, I have never had a craving or a desire to go back to drinking.
If you hadn't had your cultural traditions to fall back on, do you believe you would be where you are today?
No, I think I'd probably be dead, because I was ready to give up in those days in 1979. I didn't want to live anymore. You know, it's easier to be dead than to struggle on a daily basis.
Herb Nabigon there, and Herb's book, The Hollow Tree, is published by McGill Queen's University Press. And if you're curious to know what Herb looks like, have a look at the Sunday Morning With webpage, where you'll also find a longer version of that interview to listen to. And that's it for this week. Thanks to all my guests, and of course thanks to you for listening. Don't forget, if there's any part of today's programme you'd like to hear again, you can catch it on the BBC iPlayer, or you can download highlights from our Sunday morning podcast. Next week, I'll be speaking